Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success.
We know that running a small firm is tough, and ending the year with a profit may be even tougher. That's why we created Profit for Small Firm Architects. It's a 3-module digital course, and it's available to you for free right now by visiting entrearchitect.com/freecourse. Entree Architect Podcast, episode 165. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. This week, my friend Emily Grandstaff Rice is back here with us at the podcast, the chair of the AIA National Equity in Architecture Commission. Emily shares an update on the work that the commission has done and the 11 recommendations made to AIA National to promote equity and diversity in the profession. We talk about how AIA has responded, how they're working to make the changes needed to have the profession of architecture better reflect the society in which we all work and live, and what's planned for the future, how we can each work toward a more equitable future for architecture. This week at Entree Architect Podcast, working toward an equitable future in architecture with Emily Grandstaff Rice. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, FreshBooks, NCARB, BQE Software, and RCAT. FreshBooks, get organized, save time invoicing, and get paid faster. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks. And NCARB, helping architects reach their career goals. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/NCARB. And BQE Software, the makers of ArchiOffice, office and project management software designed specifically for architects. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/BQE. And RCAT, the leading online resource for free building product information. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/RCAT. Emily Grandstaff Rice, welcome back to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be back.
It's good to have you here. It's been a very long time since you've been here.
A long time, but not so long.
Yeah. Emily's an architect based in Boston, Massachusetts, and she was my guest here at Entree Architect Podcast at episode 14. So a while ago, that was January of 2014. We're at episode 165. So it's been a while. It's been a while. And that episode was our first connection. You and I, you know, were communicating back and forth on Twitter with the rest of the architects over there. And I invited you on. You were the current president of the BSA, the Boston Society of Architects. And you were on your campaign for Architecture Does Matter. And that's sort of where we focused. And you did give your origin story in that episode. So anybody who wants to go back to entrearchitect.com/episode14, that'll send you right to that episode. You could hear all about Emily's journey. But I want to sort of get an update on the rest of the journey, the rest of the story. So here you go. I'm gonna hand it off to you, and I'd love to know what you've been doing, because I know you've been doing a lot since January 14.
Yeah, you're too much. It's interesting the connections that you make in your professional career, and I think I read an article today about how everyone should have their own team, and you know, Mark, I consider you part of my team. You know, in the fact that you know, we basically connected 3 years ago, and when you meet really smart professional people who are talking about relevant things, advancing the profession, but also you have the ability to ask questions to, that's an amazing peer resource. Yeah. And the community just grows. So I want to commend you on, like, holy cow, you know, here we are over 100 episodes later. You're doing great work, and it's great to be part of it.
Thank you, Emily.
Oh, my pleasure. So 3 years. I was starting my year as BSA president in 2014. And honestly, I think back then I had no idea what was in store for me.
If you only knew.
I only knew. And that's not to say that it was difficult, but it was a blast. It was sort of, you know, feet to the fire type of experience about community advocacy, leading an organization, and you know, I had never been, frankly, chairman of the board of a, you know, more than $1 million organization before, and it was budget wise, and it was wild. I got to meet, of course, the mayor of Boston, because at that time they were doing a transition. The longtime mayor of Boston, Thomas Menino, was not running for re-election and ended up passing away shortly after the year change in 2014. And then, so we had a new mayor, which was wild. And there were a lot of things going on. I also got to meet the mayor of Rome. The BSA was doing a transportation. Wow. Yeah. So it was extraordinary, and it was a lot of fun. It was also a lot of work and a lot of meetings and a lot of discussion. And I think that's where I grew as a person, learning how to talk to others about relevant issues, becoming more comfortable in the public eye, and developing leadership skills that I didn't in my day-to-day work as an architect. But there's definitely a translation between the two. So that was sort of the BSA world. And as a result, that's translated into some interesting connections.
Yeah, it sort of prepared you for what's happened since then.
So two major things I will note. I switched jobs.
Yeah.
And that was a big, heavy decision for me at the time. I didn't take that lightly because I loved my previous job. But it was a realization that I needed to grow in different ways. And you know, I can talk a little bit further about that, but it was something that I took very seriously and did with great heaviness of thought. It's kind of ironic that my husband ended up switching jobs at exactly the same time, and he treated it totally differently. So so my soundbite is probably that everybody is unique, but it's a transition no matter what it is. And I was asked at the end of 2015 to chair the Equity in Architecture Commission. So this was the AIA commission that was formed after my good friend Rosa Shang.
Yeah.
And
shout out to Rosa.
She goes, and Julia Donahoe, the three of them authored a resolution 15-1 at the Atlanta AIA convention, really to hold the AIA accountable about what they were doing in terms of equity, diversity, and inclusion. And as a result, a 20-person commission, sort of a blue ribbon panel, was formed by Elizabeth Chu Richter, the 2015 AIA president at the time, and she asked me to chair it. And again, one of those situations where I could not say no, and yet I had no idea what was in store for me.
Right.
And that was just a blast. It was very thoughtful, sensitive, heavy, relevant, important work that I think is probably the most important thing, volunteer work that I've done with the AIA to date, because that work will change people's lives in a very profound way. And the result were 11 recommendations that were directly for the AIA board that touched on different aspects of the profession. I can talk about that in much greater detail, but the goal is to have the profession of architecture reflect the society we serve. And it's no secret that there are numbers of underrepresented people and women that just don't reflect our society at large with the U.S. Census, right? And so the question is why? Why not? Is it something within architecture? Is something fundamentally with the frameworks? So that's what those address. So, I've been busy, and I'm doing fun work. I'm working on some K-12 schools right now, which is a wonderful blend of sort of my education background and my architecture background. And I'm causing trouble in all the right ways.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we're definitely seeing the fruits of your labor throughout the profession. You know, with Rosas and her crew over there in San Francisco, starting the Equity by Design movement, having conferences, having that discussion, getting the word out. You were very involved in that as well. I was involved in that first conference. That has snowballed. That is really has some major momentum leading right into that resolution and the committee. And now, you know, when you're on Twitter and you're on social media, you see it in coming from the AIA. People are recognizing that there are issues that we need to deal with. People are dealing with those issues. You're seeing change. We are witnessing the change that was the result from all of that hard work over the last few years.
Yeah, thank you for that. It's we have a long way to go.
No doubt.
Right. But this is a big deal. And one of the things that I have. Well, how do I say this? I take great pleasure in, and this is not that's something that I specifically asked for, in the recommendations that the commission developed. But at the end of the presentation that I did in December for the recommendations, and this was to the AIA board and strategic council. So this represents those elected to the board and sort of the 60 members that are represented geographically across the AIA. The AIA, One of the stipulations was to create a stronger pathway for students to go from community colleges to NAB accredited degrees, and also to increase the number of scholarships aimed at diversity. And the AI board made a donation of $1 million towards the diversity advancement scholarship. And this was something that they didn't take lightly. This was quite serious, but that translates. So, $1 million is a lot of money, but just to put that in terms of numbers, that translates to 20 new scholarships for people who can study in a 5-year or a 4-year program, whatever. But it's not just a one-shot thing.
Right.
It's continuing them throughout their studies. That's basically funding as an endowment 20 new scholarships.
That's amazing. Right. That's great. I mean, and that's the AIA stepping up. You know, when people say, what is the AIA doing for me? You know, and that's one thing that the AIA is, that's only one thing that the AIA National is doing. And, they're putting their money where their mouth is.
Right. And I benefited from scholarships, and I make no secret of this, from the AIA St. Louis when I was a college student. They made an investment in me before I recognized it in myself. So some of the work that I do today is a dividend of the money that my local chapter invested in me. Similarly, it's about paying it forward.
Yeah.
It's about creating the future that you want to see. And not everyone has the same shot. So how can we make architecture a profession that everyone can have access to? Not everyone has to choose it,
yeah.
But the ability is there. That we're not excluding people even before they get to school. So it's very important to me.
Yeah. So I just had an episode, I think it was two episodes ago, with Michelle Grace Hoddle, and she was sort of telling her story, and she was talking about how her journey to becoming an architect started really, really, really early, like kindergarten. Somebody just, you know, sort of suggested that, you know, not even an architect, but sort of focused her on art and allowed her to do the things that pursued architecture that led to becoming an architect. But what I wanted to bring up is that decision sometimes, or that path happens that early, that it happens, you know, where somebody either encourages and cultivates the strength that somebody has that may lead to architecture, or like with Michelle, what she has said, that somebody didn't get in her way, that could blossom, that somebody allowed her to blossom and not discourage her from being an architect or an engineer or whatever, you know, a woman wants to be. There was a time where women just, you know, you want to be an architect, that's a man's job, you know, and that no,
that's not that long ago.
I know. And that's what I'm saying is that, and there are still people today that when their child says that, well, you don't want to do that. That's not really what women do. And you know, obviously society is changing. It's changing not just in architecture, but everywhere. And it's absolutely changing in architecture. But like you said, we have a long way to go. But it's interesting that it's not just before college, you know, it's not just high school, which is really a really critical point, because that's really when most people make that decision. But even way back beyond that, you know, high school counselors and teachers, they also need to be educated on what architects do and how to encourage people to become architects.
Absolutely. That's actually one of the recommendations out of the Equity in Architecture Commission, which was to engage children in K-12 architecture programs. So the AIA did a demographic scan at the end of 2015 to prep this commission so that we would have data at hand. And what's interesting is that they looked at it in terms of various demographic groups. And you can go into greater detail in the diversity and the architecture profession survey that they put out. But if you look at women, particularly, and you map them along sort of their rate of incidence in the population, right? Women enter at the same rate as the population, enter architecture school at the same rate in which they are at the population. So there isn't necessarily an issue of getting women into architecture school, but they tend to leave the profession after they graduate, right? So that points to an issue in terms of the practice of architecture, that it tracks that way, and then the big drop off is off the in practice. And this is supported by the Equity by Design survey and research that Rosa heads up and other surveys at hand. If you look specifically at the African American population, what's interesting is that they're not entering architecture school, so college per se, at the same rate as the population. So that speaks directly to your point that that's a population that could help or get the best surge per se out of K-12 groups. And that's not to say that others wouldn't, but it stresses the point that by saying where are they at the college level, you've completely missed the boat, because it has to start young and socialize that issue. And for Latinos, it's different. And for Native Americans and Asians, and what we've recognized in researching this is that making the profession of architecture more diverse is not a one-size-fits-all solution. We can't say the only way to do it is through K-12 programs, or the only way to do it is to give better HR practices to firms. It's more nuanced.
Yeah.
And it has to be something that is not customizable, but reaches different levels, because not all of us are the same. I mean, that's the fundamental point, right?
Right.
We're not the same, and we don't approach this profession the same, and therefore the fix is not the same. So it's more nuanced. But to speak specifically about K-12 programs, exposure is huge. And it's exposure to kids, but to families, to teachers, to counselors, to community members. And one of the ways that we as individual architects, you know, if there's nothing else you take out of this podcast, I would say, like, I challenge all the architects who are listening to this to say, how can you be a role model in your community? And whether it's going to the local career day in third grade, or it's standing up for something that's happening in the public realm, or it could be as simple as just putting a sign on your residential project, you know, designed by Mark LePage, architect.
Yeah.
Right? That's awareness. And it seems simple to us, but if it's in the public realm and it brings awareness to what we do and how we change the environment, then we are making a difference in talking about the value of our work and the relevancy of our work. And one last quick story. So yesterday I was doing student interviews at the elementary school that I'm working with for a feasibility study. And I interviewed third graders, fourth graders, graders. And my first question to them was, do you know why we're here? And they say, oh yeah, you're the architect. Okay, fine. So what do architects do? And one child had a great answer and says, architects come up with ideas. And yep. I was like, that's it, right? And other things were like build things, design things, but architects come with ideas. And I think that speaks to a larger view of architecture that I have, that we're not always designing details and we're not always space planning. We're thinking about things in a different way. And sometimes that doesn't necessarily mean a space.
Right.
We're thinking about interaction. We're thinking about ways of communicating. Like you, we're thinking about ways that we can create a professional community that raises all of our prosperity.
Yeah.
We think about things in a unique way, and that's, you know.
And how residential architects, you know, we literally change the lives of families by the work we do.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that a mother and a father interacts with their children because of the way we've designed their house mm-hmm. affects how those children grow.
Yep.
You know, it's such an amazing profession. I love being an architect.
And there's so many ways to do it.
Yeah.
That's the joy and excitement that I have. And so, you know, I'm not trying to proselytize it as the only profession out there, but it is a profession that frankly needs all voices.
Yeah.
And it's a little heartbreaking that, you know, we're not to that point yet.
Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, FreshBooks, NCARB, BQE Software, and ARCAT. 192 hours. You wish you had that much free time? That works out to about 2 business days every month. And when you're a small firm architect using FreshBooks cloud accounting software, that's the amount of administration time that you could save in 2017. That's time that you can spend doing the things you love, like being an architect. FreshBooks makes it simple to send invoices, post your expenses automatically, track your time for your whole team by project, and get organized with reports, communication, and notifications. Sign up for a free 30-day unrestricted trial and get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, get paid faster. Visit entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks to access FreshBooks for free. And be sure to enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Do you know someone in your firm who's always dreamed of getting licensed, but was unable to complete the experience requirements?
Well, maybe that person's you. Now you can get back on track with NCARB's new AXP portfolio. With this option, seasoned professionals can complete the Architectural Experience Program, the AXP, formerly known as the IDP, by submitting an online portfolio. Along with meeting your state's education and examination requirements, the portfolio will help you and your employees get one step closer to becoming a licensed architect. Learn more about NCARB's AXP portfolio at entrearchitect.com/NCARB. One of the most often requested resources here at Entree Architect is project management software. How do we keep our projects and our people organized while we grow as entrepreneur architects? BQE Software, an AIA Advantage partner and the makers of ArchiOffice, will show us how. ArchiOffice is the only office and project management software designed specifically for architects. It will help us manage people and projects and allow us to focus on designing great architecture. Whether you're working remotely or on site, ArchiOffice allows you to monitor the status of your projects and tasks and send out invoices in an accurate and timely manner. Entree Architect podcast listeners can get a fully functional 15-day trial of ArchiOffice today at entrearchitect.com/BQE. Many of you have probably already heard of ArchiCAD and use their resources on a regular basis. But for those of you who have not yet checked them out, ArchiCAD's a great tool for small firm architects. From small firms to government agencies, everyone can benefit from what they've created. ArchiCAD has huge libraries of free content, CAD, BIM, specifications, and tons more. ArchiCAD has done all the work for you. You need a spec, click on over and download the CSI three-part specification in multiple file formats. How about a CAD detail or BIM objects? All free at the click of a mouse. ArchiCAD has tons of building product content ready for you to use. It's all completely free and you don't have to register to download the content. Visit them at entrearchitect.com/ArchiCAD. Hey, and one last thing, the AIA Conference on Architecture is just around the corner. While you're there, go say hi and let them know that Entree Architect sent you. Just look for the big, giant, glowing red A and you'll find ArchiCAD. So, FreshBooks, NCARB, BQE Software, and ArchiCAD. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. So what happens after this commission? So the commission has been done. They've given the recommendations. AIA has acknowledged those recommendations, have acted on some of those recommendations. What happens from this point forward?
That's the hard work.
Yeah.
The board accepted the recommendations, and let me run through them very quickly so you can sort of get them. Number one was to make equity, diversity, and inclusion as a core value for the AIA board of directors. That was pretty big. For them to recognize that this is relevant and essential to talent retention in our profession. Measure how equity, diversity, inclusion permeates in the AIA. So start collecting data. Let's figure out what the situation is as a metric so we can track it for the future. Launch training for AIA volunteers and components. So it's the concept of it's hard for us to walk the walk unless we know what we're talking about. Training and that would be training that could be accessible to all, right? It's not proprietary, but leading the discussion about that. Along with that, creating guides for equitable, diverse, and inclusive practice. So these are best practices, highlighting those. The one that I'm very proud about and that I think that could have a huge impact is to create a position paper on equity, diversity, inclusion that really looks at the data and the assumptions. So we weren't researchers, we are architects and concerned people and we had non-architects on this commission as well, but to have the AIA commission a serious paper about this. And I think about it similar to the Boyer Report, which was a report that came out about architecture education in 1993. Something that looks at seriously what the issues are so that there's some credibility and some very specific data about the trends that we see.
Sort of taking the equity by design work and taking it to the next level.
Yeah. Yeah, and equity design will inform that.
Yeah.
But this would be something that would look at things and would be an academic paper. So yeah. Something, and equity by design is academic as well, but you know what I mean. Also develop a firm assessment tool, self-assessment, right? So a firm could take this test tool and sort of say, oh, shoot, I didn't know about that. Yeah. Even like, what are equal opportunity policies? So develop a tool so that people can become more aware, especially firm leaders, right? Yeah. And that includes small firms. It's sort of how do you know what you don't know? Also, require diversity data as part of the AIA award submissions. And this is nuanced because this is not for a criteria, but we believe there is a connection between more diverse teams and better architecture, better work that is relevant to the community, work that is empathetic, sensitive, but also creates better design. And there's many studies, especially those recently in the Harvard Business Review, about how more diverse teams, so in other words, teams that think differently, but also come from different backgrounds, actually create more creative solutions, right? So it's the whole reason why people have partners, you know, because you can't do it yourself. You need a balance of positions. And viewpoints and thoughts and all that other stuff. So also advocating for a more accessible path to higher education. I talked about that. Engaging children with K-12 programs. Telling our stories. And this is something similar to the work that you do. But to highlight that there is a range in which you can practice architecture. Yeah. It's not just one path. You can have many paths. You can create your own path. Yeah. You can take a convergent path. Come back. It's not just one type of architect or architecture that can be
out. One of my favorite topics.
Yeah, mine too. And ensuring that AIA publications reflect equity, diversity, inclusion. So this is one where, you know, it's important for us to know that if there's a visual where people all look the same, you know, you're not necessarily being diverse. It's more about raising the question of, you know, how can I make sure our media has the full range of communities represented and not just same old, same old? And it's like the hashtag all male panel, right? Yep. If you've got a panel of six or seven architects and they all look the same and they're all of the same gender, you know, are you really doing a good job at reaching out for a diverse aspect? But diversity is nuanced. I do want to talk about this a little bit. So Dr. Shirley Jackson, who was the facilitator that we used for the commission, I had this great graphic called the diversity iceberg, and I made one for the AIA, which I can share with you. You can put on the site.
Yeah, I love that.
Diversity, when we look at someone and we have implicit bias and we make judgments, because that's part of human nature. This is like it's our survival instincts kind of kicking in. What we perceive as diversity, in other words, what's the color of my hair, the color of my skin, the type of clothes that I wear, that's really kind of the 10% that we see. And it's like the top of the iceberg, yeah. Right? But we all know that an iceberg is much deeper below the water. So below the water would be things such as religion, education, background, practice type, sexual orientation, disability that we cannot see, right? All of these other things that frankly make us diverse and create the whole picture of who we are that you can't tell by judging a person by their visual appearance. And you and I are on video chat right now, so you can see my hands going up and down doing this. But it was really interesting when we had commission discussions about you could have that panel of seven men, right? And you could have more diversity in that panel than you realize.
Yeah.
And I'm judging it by the fact that they're all one gender.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a more nuanced conversation, but I'm not letting them off the hook. I think gender is an issue because we are.
But I think that's very, very important to acknowledge that an all male panel may be much more diverse than it appears they are, you know, from their knowledge, from their expertise, from their backgrounds. You have no idea until you get into who they are and you look beyond below the surface in that iceberg. And that's something I think very often that is, you know, sort of skipped over, you know, that it's just black or white, you know, and that's it.
Yeah. And it's not a male female thing. It's not, you know, the color, it's interesting, you know, having kids today, I specifically have very nuanced conversations about the language we use. It's understanding that people are more than what we judge them by visually. And part of that is not always trying to find your similarities. Like, you know, Mark, what do you and I have in common? You know, that's typically what you ask someone when you meet them. Like, where did you go to school? Oh, you and I both went to school in New York, da, 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 all that. Or you know, Anne Marie went to RPI.
RPI, yeah.
That's a connection. Many times it's our differences that we can start to talk about and learn about each other rather than our similarities.
Yeah.
So that's been a sea change for me over the last year. And I think it has reframed the way in which I engage people, even socially, of being aware of the leading questions that I'm asking, and also recognizing that it's more fun to find the unique qualities in people rather than what we have in common.
Yeah, yeah.
But so anyway, I you and I can talk for a long time, but those were the recommendations. So what happens now?
Right, so what happens next?
Yeah, so I, along with Rosa Shang, were asked by the current president, Tom Venier, to chair a new board committee called the Equity and Future of Architecture Committee. And this is a committee that we're tasked with charting these 11 recommendations, as well as other equity, diversity, and inclusion items. And we're working, and we're directly responsible to the AIA Board of Directors to give progress on this. So we're taking them one by one and sort of diving into what can we do now, and what do we need a little more time to get rolling. For example, the position paper. We need to get a group together and to write a good RFP and to develop that knowledge. Whereas, you know, telling our stories, that's one where we can start hit ground running and beta testing right now. So Rosa and I are working diligently with that, along with some amazing, amazing people on the committee that are with me. So, you know, I am all about getting it done. Let's get this done. I put too much into this to see it sort of be put on a shelf as a book and not an action.
Yeah.
So
and that's what's happening. That's why I ask, because I mean, it's so, you see the momentum, you see that snowball getting bigger, you see the discussions happening, and you see this panel, you know, the committee put together. You want to make sure that momentum keeps growing, and that conversations like this happen more often throughout the world. I think it's really important, because if you just do those recommendations and you give it to them, then they could say, oh, we had this committee and we had these recommendations and here are the check boxes that we did, and aren't we good? Aren't we diverse now?
Yeah.
You want to make sure that doesn't happen, and that's not going to happen with you and Rosa, you know, on in charge over there, and the rest of your crew. So
yes, let's schedule a date to talk 3 years from now, and I can report back on.
We will do that. We will,
or sooner. Yeah. Or sooner.
No, I'm sure it'll be sooner. And yeah. And so, is there anything else you want to discuss before we wrap up?
Well, I want to say that, and this is really a plug to you, which is, as I've been thinking about things over the last 2 years, you've been a great resource to me. And also, I was part of your community for a while.
Yeah, you were a member of the Entre Architect Academy, yeah.
And it was fabulous. It was fabulous for the topics that we talked about, but also to understand that I wasn't alone in grappling with some of the issues that I was dealing with. And it helped me further clarify what my intentions were, but also to understand that I didn't have to get it perfect. In other words, the next step, it was okay for it to be a step forward, not the landing place. And
right.
I mean in the fact that I'm at a fabulous job now. I love what I do. I love where I work. And I had to let go of sort of the perfectness to find peace.
Yeah.
So that was good.
Yeah. I'm glad you're at peace, and I'm glad you found your place, and I know there's a lot more ahead of you. And I want you to come back, because I want to talk about that. You had talked about the difficult decision to leave your past employer, the decisions to take these big, huge steps without knowing what's on the other side of that big step. I want to talk about that, because I know there are a lot of people who are listening to us right now who are in that position right now, having to make a big decision that is sort of a scary decision, and they're not sure what's going to happen in the future if they take that decision. And that's a whole episode. So I'd love to have you come back and talk about that.
That would be great.
Share that part of your personal story. But I want to commend you. I want to commend you for the amazing progress that you've made, both personally and professionally. You and I have talked many, many times off the air in private and talked about the things that you're going through. And I'm really proud of you. I'm proud of you for what you've done, what you're doing, and the effects that you're having on our profession every day. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So we'll catch up in Orlando.
Yeah, I'll be there. We're we're having a meetup, so I hope to see you at the meetup on Thursday. And everybody else who's interested in showing up, at the time of this recording, we haven't finalized the location yet, so I can't announce it. But we will be having a meetup Thursday night, and it's sort of a casual hangout. So just, you know, whenever you're done with all of the other things that you're supposed to be doing, that's where you're going to land.
Well, I went to your one last year in Philadelphia. It was a lot of fun. So thank you for that. And my other AIA convention memory with you is I think I shared my breakfast with you one morning when we were sitting, yep. Because I can't remember who the speaker was. It might have been Bill Clinton. That's what it was.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
You and I had gotten there really, really early. And then we realized that we had to wait almost 45 minutes for it to start. And I think I had an extra apple and I shared. Yeah, but anyway.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
You know, it's
good to have friends in high places.
It's good to have friends.
So before we wrap up, Emily, I want to ask you that one question that I've been asking everybody here at Entre Architect Podcast. And that question is, what is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
Yeah, this is important, and I'm going to answer in two ways, because I've been talking so much about equity and diversity. One way that you can build a better business is to ask yourself a question of, am I really reaching sort of the whole of the community or just a piece of it? And that's not to say that every architect needs to do everything, but in terms of the value and the relevancy of what we do, I think there's a large untapped market of future clients out there that small firms have a direct connection to. And we all know that marketing comes from, you know, who we see socially, whether it's dropping off your kids or your other community groups, or even being sort of in the public eye and the random cold call that you get, or internet marketing, or right? It's all about connections. And I would challenge this group to say, are you thinking about your connections in a larger, more equitable, diverse way? And are there ones that you are potentially not tapping that you could? So don't be scared of expanding. Expanding is good, and that can serve your business and in some really amazing ways. And the second thing that I think small firms can do to build a better business is to really listen to the people that they work with and that they employ. And that gets at the point of valuing our differences and understanding that, you know, someone might do something differently, not to irk you per se, but because they have a different viewpoint and they approach things in different ways. And to have those conversations that you might feel you couldn't have, but it actually builds better understanding amongst your employees and your community, and it strengthens the relationship. So don't be so careful. It's okay to have a conversation about things that you don't understand, and that you want to know more about, and ultimately that builds a stronger community at large. So,
I love asking that question because I get so many different answers, and that's a very thought-provoking one. So thank you very much for that, and thank you for being here at Entree Architect Podcast and sharing your knowledge here, and for all the hard work you're doing.
My pleasure. So much for the opportunity.
If you like what we shared today, complete show notes and a direct link to download this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode165. Share this link with someone you think might benefit from what we shared today. And don't forget to visit the website to gain access to our digital course, Profit for Small Firm Architects, and learn how to build a powerful profit plan that will work for your small firm. Visit entrearchitect.com/free course. Hundreds of architects have taken this course. It's a great place to start building a better business, and it's free. It's our gift to you at entrearchitect.com/free course. My name is Mark Arlepage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. I appreciate you for being here. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.